Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. A little programming note for you at the top of our show. Today is the last day that we'll be bringing you the regular COVID-19 dispatches that we've been making for the past year. But Prognosis isn't going anywhere. We'll be off for the rest of the week, and then back next week with a new season. In 6 in-depth episodes, we'll go deep on one of the most important stories of our time, the life-saving COVID-19 vaccines and what it means that some people will refuse to take them. The season is called Doubt, and it will be in your Prognosis feed on March 23rd. And now, here's what happened in virus news today. Europe's biggest countries, including Germany and France, suspended use of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine as fears about its health effects grow. This creates yet another delay for the European Union's inoculation campaign. A growing list of governments have stopped distributing the shots following reports of serious blood clotting, even as the European Union's drug regulator said the benefits of the vaccine continue to outweigh any risks. Coronavirus cases in the U.S. rose 1.25% last week, the slowest increase since the pandemic began. It was the second straight week in which the rate of new infections hit a record low. The slowdown comes as the U.S. vaccination effort ramps up. Last week, an average of 2.39 million doses a day were administered, according to Bloomberg's vaccine tracker. So far, nearly 70 million Americans have received at least one dose of a vaccine, or roughly a quarter of the adult population. Finally, California's 7-day positive test rate fell to a record low 2%, according to the state's health department. California has administered more than 11.8 million vaccines in total. The data came a day before Los Angeles County, which was the epicenter of the post-holiday surge, plans to ease its restrictions on indoor dining and allow restaurants, gyms, museums, and movie theaters to reopen. And now for our main story. This month marks the one-year anniversary in the U.S. of nationwide school closures. The public health measure was designed to help stem the spread of COVID-19. But in doing so, it's had a profound effect on children. That's in contrast to the disease itself, which rarely makes young people seriously ill. Senior editor Jason Gale spoke to experts about kids and COVID, and why keeping children out of the classroom may leave a lasting legacy.
Scientists agree that children are capable of transmitting SARS-CoV-2 to other kids and to adults, but younger children in particular don't seem to be major transmitters of the coronavirus.
But I think what is clear is that children certainly can transmit the disease, but they are not the major drivers of transmission in the community. And I think that's the key take-home message that I think very few people would disagree with now.
This is Nigel Curtis.
I'm a paediatric infectious disease physician and researcher, and I work at the University of Melbourne and the Murdoch Children's Research Institute at the Royal Children's Hospital. In terms of cases, there's very low cases in the first two decades, and then it seems to increase in young adults. But when it comes to severe disease, as measured by symptomatic disease and hospitalization and death, then that's exceptionally rare. In fact, deaths are almost don't occur under the age of 20.
But it would be wrong to think that children are immune to COVID-19's harms. Around the world, kids have experienced a raft of them: physical abuse, learning gaps, anxiety, and depression. Many of these stem from school closures, social isolation, and the stress-inducing consequences of the pandemic. And that's informing considerations for keeping kids in school.
if you look at a kind of bigger picture, take a step back and look at the damage that is done to children by not going to school and all the other consequences, you know, the balance is really in favour of being very careful about school closures.
The disruption has been unprecedented. More than 1.6 billion learners were affected in 190 countries in 2020 alone, according to UNESCO. Although alternatives to in-person learning have been introduced in many places, some 470 million pupils can't get access to online or other required content for remote education. In the United States, one in four kids lacks the needed tools for remote learning, aid group Save the Children said this month.
We're talking not just short-term, but very long-term effects on the both the physical, mental, and emotional health of children in the future. If you think of the ramifications in low-income countries, they are even greater in terms of lost opportunities for immunizations. And obviously, in those countries, children have a shorter period of total education. So if you lose 6 months or a year of education, that is a larger proportion of your total education. So the ramifications are much greater in low- and middle-income countries.
Well, I think you have to start with the fact that this has been an evolving conversation.
Annette Anderson is Deputy Director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Safe and Healthy Schools in Baltimore. I asked whether the pandemic will further disadvantage some kids in the United States.
The equity question continues to be a major question for those in education, because we know that the estimates have ranged from as low as 3% to as high as 10% of students who have been disengaged for almost the better part of a year.
Students from particular socioeconomic and racial groups are likely to be overrepresented among those who drop out of school. McKinsey & Co. estimated in June that learning loss will probably be greatest among youth from low-income families and Black and Hispanic students, exacerbating existing achievement gaps by 15 to 20%. The consulting firm predicted U.S. students in grades K through 12 may lose, on average, the equivalent of a year of full-time work and lifetime earnings solely as a result of COVID-related learning losses. But it's not that schools haven't wanted to open safely, Annette says.
We have seen that schools have had this kind of trial by fire in terms of trying to reopen successfully, and that many schools have had to use a system of using different ideas around what it would take to reopen and then pivoting when those ideas did not work well, meaning that some have had to go back and had to close. And that's been a global challenge.
For one thing, school buildings pose a challenge.
We still have classrooms that don't necessarily have windows or strong ventilation systems. And so we know that has to be a priority, particularly in some of these older buildings. You have to, you know, remember that a lot of the buildings, especially in our large urban cities, were built at the turn of the last century. They looked like fortresses because they were meant to connote safety. And as they've gotten older, they're harder to remediate. They're harder to renovate.
Annette sees that as part of the challenge moving forward.
And I just think that we are in a place where we want to press reset about the reopening of our schools. And so we have some time now to think about what we want our schools to be and how we can reconceptualize using some of those buildings that have been historically a challenge.
Modes of teaching and the tools and technologies used for learning will also change, Annette says.
I think that people expect that face-to-face learning is the ideal, but I don't think that we are ever going quite back to that. I think what you're starting to see is that there's just more technology. So whereas you may have just had students have interaction on a laptop, now you're seeing them use multiple devices all at the same time. And it's also that they're learning how to engage with one another socially. You're seeing that teachers are teaching both to hybrid learners as well as to their face-to-face students. And the technology is what is the bridge for that to happen. So students can have group projects so that they can have lectures happening in their classes. There is much more engagement that's happening, and it's happening across multiple devices.
COVID-19 will leave its mark on this generation's children in so many profound and enduring ways. But the pandemic's effect on schools may change the way we learn forever.
That was Jason Gale, and that's it for our show today. For coverage of the outbreak from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis podcast is produced by Topher Forges, Magnus Henriksen, and me, Laura Carlson. Today's main segment was reported by Jason Gale. Original music by Leo Sidrin. Our editors are Rick Schein and Francesca Levy. We also want to take a moment to thank the people who helped make the show over the past year. Emma Court, Kristen V. Brown, Michelle Faye Cortez, John Tozzi, Drew Armstrong, Cynthia Coons, James Payton, Katie Boyce, Jared Sandberg, and Jordan Gaspure. Francesca Levy is head of Bloomberg Podcasts. Thanks for listening.